Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the O'Leary Partners Observations Podcast, where we provide unique insights from influential Floridian professionals, UBS thought leaders, and other distinguished voices within our UBS O'Leary Partners network. Today's episode is titled Civility Wins: Family, Finances, and Moving Forward. I'm your host, Gabrielle O'Leary, a financial advisor for the O'Leary Partners at UBS Private Wealth Management. I'm located in Miami, Florida, and I can be reached at 305-536-9241 or gabrielle.o'leary@ubs.com. Our special guest here today is Kristen Goss, founder, owner, and managing partner of KWG Family Legal and Mediation Services, based in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'll begin by saying one of the themes we come back to often on this podcast is that life's biggest financial decisions are rarely just financial, right? They're often tied to major life transitions, whether that's a business sale, retirement, the loss of a loved one, a major career change, or even a significant family transition. And when those moments occur, people are often asked to make important decisions while simultaneously navigating uncertainty, emotion, and change. And today's conversation is about those transitions. So I'd love to introduce Kristen Goss, a Floridian family law attorney whose philosophy is essentially centered around helping families move through difficult situations and doing it with dignity, clarity, and a mindset that she calls civility wins, which we'll unpack in just a little bit. So Kristen, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Oh, thank you so much, Gabrielle, for having me. It's such an honor. I really appreciate you having me today.
Of course, the pleasure is all mine. And before we jump into the topic itself, I'd love to start with you, Kristen, and your story. Could you please tell us a little bit more about your background and what ultimately led you towards family law, mediation, and essentially this area of practice?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you so much for that question. It really goes back to home. My mom was a social worker and my dad was a pastor. And from a very early age, I observed them helping families. And I developed a love from a very early age of wanting to help families. I also love rules, policies, procedures, the law. And so family law is what made sense and fell in love with it and am very passionate about helping families and empowering them with the law to make a change, not only for today, but the future.
That's wonderful. And I love how you say it goes really back to home, right? I think a lot of those personal experiences that we encounter growing up really shape our attitudes towards the future as well as our career trajectories. And one thing that I know you and I have talked about in terms of your capabilities and services that really immediately stood out to me when learning about your practice was your catchphrase called Civility Wins. It's simple. It's memorable and honestly can feel a little countercultural these days. So I'd love to hear from you. What does that phrase mean to you?
It means everything, honestly. And I would be remiss in saying that a colleague of mine and I came up with the phrase a few years back. Her name is Sandy Boisrond, and she is an attorney as well. She is a professor, not sure exactly the position, but she teaches now at St. Thomas as well and offers guidance for law students. And so we came up with that phrase, like I said, years ago. But in family law in particular, I added Civility Wins, the family law edition, and it goes beyond because, yes, I am a family law attorney, but I feel like civility is something that we can offer in everyday lives, personally, professionally, in all aspects of our lives. And without having that concept, without moving forward with civility and how you operate in life, I think that you are allowing other people to gain control and keep control over you. When you are operating in civility, to me, it is operating with dignity, with respect for yourself, knowing who you are, setting boundaries, but doing so in a very respectful way, so that you are bringing peace of mind to yourself, but you're also respecting others as well. So it means everything, like I said, essentially.
I love that. I think respecting everything is such an important distinction, right? Because I think civility is often misunderstood. When people hear the word, and sometimes they could possibly start assuming that it means avoid difficult conversations or essentially giving something up. But what I'm hearing from you is that civility is essentially the opposite, right? It's not about avoiding conflict. It's about creating an environment where better decisions can be made and better outcomes can become possible. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I oftentimes say that when emotions are high, logic goes out the door. And I think that civility and having that focus brings it back, and you're empowering yourself in how you behave and how you react or not react. And I'm so glad that you mentioned conflict as well. Conflict is something that can be positive. It doesn't have to necessarily be negative. And even if it's something that you would view as negative, being civil and coming to the table and communicating is key, because you're able to have a path forward and be able to resolve whatever the conflict is by doing so in a very respectful way.
And I think that's such a message, to your point, that's applicable far beyond family law. I see it in my world too, Kristen, whether it's essentially a business partnership, a family disagreement, or even financial decision making. And to your point, people tend to make better decisions when they're focused on solutions rather than the positions. Kristen, when someone first comes to you, what do you think people misunderstand most about the divorce process?
It could be one of two things. They could be very scared, right? Attorneys, unfortunately, we don't have the biggest reputation, right? People don't want to come to us. We can be intimidating. It's not a happy time when someone comes to a family law attorney 9 times out of 10. So that's one of the things. And, you know, feeling the additional stress. But I think that that is something that is a myth, because when clients come to us, it is more of how can we help you? How can we empower you? And they feel so much better after having a conversation, after being represented, because our focus is not only resolving today, but how can we move forward and make a better tomorrow? And so I think that that is number one. And then another thing is that from the collaborative side, right? Because I'm collaboratively trained. I'm also a family law mediator. And so I feel that people believe that it has to be perfect. They have to have things figured out. And that's not the case, because if they had everything figured out, they wouldn't need me. And so I would highly encourage individuals that just because it's not perfect and you're frustrated and you're stressed out does not make it a case where you cannot seek help from an attorney, because that's what we're here for, and definitely want to help you resolve whatever conflict, whatever interests you have that are legal.
I agree with you, and that really resonates with what our team sees too. Because most people naturally focus on getting through the divorce itself, but what we find, what often gets overlooked, is everything else that follows. The financial decisions, the family dynamics, or the rebuilding process. And in many ways, those chapters can have much longer lasting impact than the legal process itself. So let's talk about that intersection between emotions and finances. From your perspective, Kristen, what are some of the biggest emotional or financial mistakes people make early in the process?
Yes, great question. And I'm so glad I have you here as a wealth advisor, because I think that someone like you is key for sure when someone is contemplating a divorce. Because if you don't properly plan, once the divorce is filed legally, you can't start making changes, closing accounts, switching accounts, adding additional people on accounts, things of that nature. A lot of times in Florida, we have what you call a status quo order. So whatever is the case, whatever accounts are opened, whatever accounts are closed once that divorce is filed, you cannot make any changes until at the end and the divorce is finalized. So I find a lot of times where people have not consulted with the wealth advisor in advance, for example, and that can really harm them, essentially, as they're going through the divorce process. Another thing is financial disclosures. That is a process that is required when you're going through a divorce, and not disclosing all of the information. You know, a lot of times when you have debt, for example, it could be something that is not pretty. It's not sexy. No one wants to talk about it. But it is something that must be brought to the table, because you want to have all of the eggs on the table, as they say, to ensure full transparency so that we can have all of the information as the attorney, for example, to be able to guide you and to make recommendations on what needs to be done and to be properly prepared in the event that the matter has to go in front of the judge. The judge does not know your life financially, for example. And so you're going to have all of the information, the good, the bad, the ugly, the embarrassing, out on the table. So that is one of the biggest mistakes, not sharing all of the information for embarrassing, you know, you feel embarrassed, you don't think it's important, and not reaching out to professionals such as yourself to be prepared.
Full transparency, the full picture, everything that you said deeply resonates with me. And I think it also plays to really the importance of families, individuals really needing to slow down before making major decisions. And I think that's something that we see on the financial side as well, especially when gathering all those pieces of the puzzle, right? Those moments that feel most urgent are also those same moments where thoughtful planning matters most. And that's something that I've really observed throughout my career, is that people rarely make their best decisions when they're operating from fear. And the same thing goes whether it's a market downturn, it could be the sale of a business, a divorce, emotions, they're taking center stage naturally. So Kristen, how do you help clients create enough space to think beyond today's challenges and focus on where they ultimately want to be 5 to 10 years from now?
That's a great question. And I love that question, because it goes back to me and my passion for helping them and wanting to resolve. So from the very onset, before they even retain me, during a consultation, one of the main things we discuss are what are your goals? What are your biggest concerns and your fears and your interests? We really, really unpack that. And every single time I have a conversation with a client from beginning to end, we continue to talk about that and discuss, because goals can change. And I think in the very beginning, when someone comes for a consultation, for example, that's probably the first time they've thought about that. And so it takes time for someone to really unpack. And so continuing to have the conversation and dig deeper. I like to use the orange scenario. Someone can say, I want the orange, right? And the other side can say, I want the orange. But what do you want the orange for? What is your true interest? Do you want to make orange juice with the orange, or do you want to make a cake with the orange? Because both are two different interests, and knowing that can really help you resolve and help that client legally in moving forward, not just for today, but in the future. And there are so many other scenarios that we can use, you know, when it comes to the different interests, when it involves children, when it involves their finances. A lot of things that are scary, because we don't know from day to day what's going to happen. But when you talk about what is your ultimate goal, then we can start from there and have a conversation of how we can get to that goal. I'm sure it's the same with you when clients come to you and talk about the finances of things and planning ahead.
The what are your goals as well as the orange metaphor is such a valuable perspective. And I just want to touch on that because I think that when emotions are high, it's so easy to become focused on what's immediately in front of you. And I know a lot of times clients have an all or nothing mentality too, but these are the decisions made during this period that are often going to shape someone's life for years to come. And I think that many listeners would be really surprised about how significant some of these decisions may become. And for families, we're talking about homes, retirement accounts, investment portfolios, business interests, trusts, or even future income streams. And sometimes that involves multiple generations. So it's not simply dividing assets, it's really designing two independent futures. So Kristen, how important is it to have a collaborative team involved throughout that entire process?
It is crucial. I really have a holistic way of moving forward and helping my clients. And ideally, I would love to have every professional on the team because it sets the client up for success. And we talk about not only for today, but looking ahead in the future. So for example, even if there's a child with special needs, for example, I'll bring on a special needs consultant who is skilled and trained in handling matters specifically geared towards children with special needs. Because as you can imagine, and I'm sure you see this on the financial side, a lot of times it doesn't just stop and the support doesn't just stop when that child turns 18 because of the severity, depending on the severity of the special needs of that child. When you're looking at it from just a linear standpoint as an attorney, without having additional members on the team who are trained in specific aspects of what you're dealing with the client, you could end up screwing the client over. For example, child support, say, okay, this child has special needs, child support ends at 18. Is that really realistic? And so using these additional professionals who have their niche expertise is really, again, setting the client up for success in the future. And it really alleviates a lot of the stress, the uncertainty. It provides clarity to clients because they're able to really see a game plan. And that's what they really need. And that's what they're really looking for is, I don't know what today looks like. I don't even know what tomorrow looks like. Everything is so blurry. But having these additional professionals on my side to really gain clarity and say, okay, this is what a year from now is going to look like. This is what 5 years from now is going to look like. So they don't have to come back to the table. That is the ideal. And that's what I love helping clients do, is to resolve that. So they don't have to come back and see me ever again, at least from the family law perspective.
Absolutely. I think getting it done with the right approach at the right time is beyond important and saves a lot of unnecessary time spent on issues that could have been resolved a lot earlier. And I think that it's really interesting because when people hear the word divorce, they think about dividing assets, but really listening to you and what you're talking about, it's so much bigger than that. You're helping families transition from one shared future to two independent futures. And that's rarely something one professional could navigate alone. And I think it's so important what you even brought up about bringing in a special needs professional. And that collaborative approach deeply resonates with me. And that's one thing at the O'Leary Partners that we tell families is that major life transitions rarely happen in silos. And to your point, those legal decisions are affecting financial decisions, but also the financial decisions are affecting the family dynamics that could happen for 18 plus years. And those family dynamics are often influencing long-term outcomes. So I couldn't agree with you more, Kristen. And that's why we've always believed that the best results happen when the attorneys, the financial advisors, the CPAs, the mediators, or even the therapists and other niche professionals are sitting on the same side of the table towards the same objective. So, Kristen, when you've seen that work well, and I would assume that you've been a part of a lot of scenarios where it's done extremely well and then others maybe not so much, what differences do you notice for the family involved when it's worked really well?
I see that they are relieved. That is probably the number one thing, because when they come and before, you know, having a game plan and bringing on these professionals and working collaboratively, it's that fear and operating out of fear, making unwise decisions. And so I see the relief. I also see better co-parenting if there are children involved. I see the fear kind of subside and, again, them gaining clarity on how tomorrow is going to look. For example, that spouse that was not the breadwinner and is receiving support. This is the amount of support. This is what it's going to look like. This is how I can really get on my feet and move forward, maybe get a part-time job eventually. But they have that game plan and they feel better. And then because they feel better internally and outwardly, then the children begin to take on a different and more positive direction. Because I think that oftentimes parents who are in the midst of all of the chaos, right, and trying to unpack their emotions, not even really understanding what they're feeling half the time because they're in different places. 9 times out of 10, one may have moved on and like mentally is wanting to move forward. But a lot of times it's that one spouse that has not moved forward and they're in denial and they're constantly trying to talk about what happened in the past. Once they get past that and we have a team of professionals, including therapists that are not doing therapy, but are like trained because of their background, helping the couple move forward emotionally and helping them starting to talk and have a conversation about the finances and gaining that clarity, especially for the spouse that didn't have control over the finances, so that the spouse can see, okay, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I am more educated about where we stand financially. It brings a lot of clarity, which in turn also brings positivity to the children because they feed off of the parents and the energy that the parents bring.
I think that's where people often underestimate the value of having the right team around them, right? Because not just one person has all the answers, but because every professional sees a different piece at the puzzle, and that often could be at different times. And when those perspectives come together, families are often able to make decisions, to your point, with a lot more clarity, confidence, relief, better co-parenting. And I think that's especially important to make sure that all those boxes are checked off. And I also want to shift gears here because I think it's really important to touch on a significant part of your work, especially when you mention better co-parenting, because a lot of your work involves advocating for children and serving as a guardian at litem. Mm-hmm. So, Kristen, what do you wish parents better understood about the conflict and how that impacts children during family transitions?
That is a great question. I think that if they could take a step back and see their children as a product of both them and the other parent, I think that that is a starting point, because 9 times out of 10, they don't see it. They're not recognizing that my animosity towards this other parent is really having a negative impact on the child. They're not paying attention to that because they're so caught up in their emotions of, I hate this other person because they cheated on me, or because they're a bad parent, or because I don't agree with their parenting style, or I fell out of love with them, whatever the case may be. They're so focused on getting back, I think, at the other parent a lot of times that the children are overlooked. And so if there is a way for them to kind of take a step back and say that this child is a beautiful product of not just me, but this other parent, and I can vent to my best friend, I can vent to, you know, a close relative that I trust, and talk whatever and say whatever about the other parent to that person. But I cannot, in like setting rules and going back to the boundary setting again, I cannot talk bad about the other parent in front of the child or the children, because again, the children feed off of that energy and it really has a negative impact on the children. They can begin to have suicidal thoughts. They, you know, resort to cutting themselves, bad behavior in school, and no parent wants to see that. I really, truly believe that every parent, most parents, want to see their children do well and surpass them in life. And so if we can just, again, take a step back and realize that having this tension and showing it around the children is going to have a negative impact, I think that that would help in the scenario.
That's incredibly powerful. And really what stands out to me with your remarks is that children don't necessarily need perfect circumstances, but maybe what they need is a little consistency, some stability, and they need to feel supported by the adults around them. And that's probably one of the reasons your work in this area is so important. And I know you can agree with me on this, that while a marriage may end, parenting doesn't. Right. And when speaking with clients, our team often sees families that are often redefining relationships rather than ending them altogether because they want the best outcome for their child. What to you does successful co-parenting look like from your perspective, especially when emotions are really high?
Mm-hmm. I think respect is at the center for sure, and being empathetic to the other parent's perspectives, because it's so easy, you know, we're all guilty of this. Like, I have my certain perspective and I think that I'm right, but there are a lot of different ways at looking at things. And when it comes to co-parenting, is this something that's really going to make or break the child? For example, I may want the child to go to bed at 7 p.m., but when the child is with the other parent, they may say 9 p.m. is a good time. Is that really something worth having a disagreement over? And you could disagree. One of the main statements that I use a lot of times is, well, we'll have to agree to disagree. It's really finding ways to compromise. Again, not easy, but it can be done. And again, placing the children at the center and the forefront of why you are doing this. It doesn't mean that you are giving in. It doesn't mean that you are losing power or strength or anything like that. I think that it takes a lot of strength to be able to compromise and co-parent, because what you said earlier is key. This is something that you're going to have to be dealing with for the rest of your life if you have children together, because let's say even at 18, they graduate and they go off to college, but then there are other things that can arise, college expenses, or they, after college, want to get married, and then there's the wedding, and then the grandkids. So you're somehow going to be interacting with the other parent for a long time, and finding ways that you can respect each other's perspective, compromise, and then at the end of the day, it's really something that is not going to make or break it. Is this something that we can agree to disagree with and move forward?
So follow-up question to that, Kristen, because for parents listening today, mm-hmm. I think what you just said is so important about finding ways to compromise. And to that note, what do you think are some practical, actionable items that they could do to really protect their children emotionally during that process?
So I think definitely having some type of boundary setting, some rules where they both can see eye to eye. For example, we're not going to talk bad about each other in front of the children. If we have to have a conversation on the side, we'll have a conversation on the side. If it's necessary that we need a mediator to get involved because it's really a sticking point that we want to ensure the children are set up for success, and I'm just not seeing eye to eye with you on this, and it's not, you're not budging, I'm not budging, maybe having someone that's a neutral third party to come in. What are the parameters for that, and having an understanding on that and communicating about it, having certain specific set times. we all have busy lives and schedules and things of that nature. A lot of times I see it as a way of, well, the kids can't talk at 8 a.m. every day, but like being able to be flexible and what are the things that we're going to be flexible about. But I think at the end of the day, it's communication and knowing that it's not going to be one size fits all and it's not going to be my way or the highway. That is something that's going to have to go out of the door and being able to have an understanding and come up with things that you can agree to. And to the extent that needs to be specific, putting in specific times, but also being flexible at the same time.
That's excellent guidance about being flexible because children may not remember every detail about what happened, but they'll often remember how the adults around them handled it. And I think that those examples really shape the way that they may even navigate challenges in their own lives later on. Now I want to transition to rebuilding and planning for the next chapter because eventually the legal process concludes. The paperwork is signed, the court dates end, and people find themselves facing a very different question, which is, what's next? Kristen, what does rebuilding confidence after divorce look like from your perspective?
That's a great question. So how I handle it with my clients is after a case is finalized, we do have a next steps discussion. And that could include a lot of different things. For that spouse that never handled the finances, connecting them with someone like you, making sure to follow up with them, because sometimes people need just handholding. Again, life gets busy, people get sidetracked, and continuing to show that we're here, checking in with the client, even though there's no longer an active case, but just making sure that they are okay, that they're making the next steps, like after we have that conversation, that they've reached out to a wealth advisor, that they've sought out the co-parenting classes that they needed to take, that they have reached out to the therapist. Maybe the children needed a therapist to make sure that they were set up for success. So checking in with the client and not just saying, okay, case is done, we wrapped up legally, so bye. Hopefully you will never need to come back to me and we never need to talk again. They really need a check-in to ensure that everything is okay and that to the extent they need to have an additional professional that was not anticipated even at the time that we had that next step conversation because of something that came out of the blue that was not anticipated. Having a check-in will set that person up for success and connect them to the right professionals when they need it and they don't feel left hanging.
That's a good point. I like the way that you frame that, especially on being left hanging, right? Because rebuilding isn't a single moment. It's a process. And in many ways, I also believe that that's where the real work begins. Throughout the legal process, people are understandably focused on getting through directly with what's in front of them. But once that chapter closes, they're often faced with a whole new set of decisions. On my side, I see it that they're creating a brand new financial life. They're also creating a new routine, a new vision for the future. And Kristen, I was curious from your standpoint, what are you seeing as some of the biggest surprises people encounter once they've moved beyond the legal process itself?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I think transitioning into what is the new normal. There are a lot of times where you could have a time sharing schedule in place, for example, and then as children get older, and oftentimes we do have this discussion, but it's not something that every time a client can anticipate. Let's say there's an additional activity such as tennis and they're traveling often. And so we have to maybe renegotiate and come back to the table and talk about a different time sharing schedule. Or, you know, let's be honest, we have a map of things financially, but having a map and actually moving forward and doing it and having a professional such as yourself to really make sure that it's being implemented doesn't always happen. So being able to, again, come back to the table, renegotiate, reconnecting them with professionals such as yourself if it comes to the financial piece. I had a case one time where this particular spouse or ex-spouse agreed, didn't have an attorney at the time, but agreed to continue to be on the mortgage, make payments towards the mortgage, which is a really bad deal because moving forward now, as you can imagine, the interest rates have changed and making payments on the home that this particular ex-spouse is in, plus the marital home, it's becoming a lot financially. So that would be an example of someone being in a position that they didn't anticipate they would be in at the time. They just wanted to let's find out a dotted line, let me be done with my divorce. But then now they're in this position and they really cannot financially afford what they've agreed to. So again, I think being flexible and knowing that you can't anticipate everything, but having someone like myself on your team who really not only cares about, okay, let's just get it done, but, you know, really resolving for the future so that you're not continuing to be stressed out is key.
That's fascinating, especially what you said about your points on being able to map everything out financially, because we're seeing something very similar on the private wealth side, because most people assume that the divorce settlement is the finish line. But in reality, it's often the starting point. Suddenly, there are questions about things like retirement, estate planning, beneficiary designations, cash flow, taxes, or even investment decisions. And especially if one spouse took the lead, or let's say played a more active role in making household financial decisions. And that could be something as simple as deciding whether or not to keep a home, right? To your point, real estate transactions play a pivotal role. And that could also have ripple effects across multiple areas of someone's life. And I know on our side, our team is actively addressing these questions in real time with clients who find themselves in brand new, challenging situations. So, Kristen, to that point, what are some planning conversations you wish people started having earlier in the process?
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you mentioned estate planning. That is something I think that everyone 18 and older should have, at the very least, a healthcare designation, a power of attorney, living will, pre-need guardian designation. So from the onset, also, when you're talking about divorce, that's a conversation we have as well, and setting them up for success on that end. Because let's say, God forbid, something were to happen and you as the parent aren't able to make decisions anymore, but you're still living, who do you trust to be able to care for your minor children in the event you're not able to financially as well as the day-to-day? So having those discussions, I think, it's crucial. Those types of discussions also, similar to divorce, a lot of times people will hold off. They don't want to have a conversation. But I think, you know, using the analogy that I oftentimes use is, do you want to be in an ocean drowning, or do you want to be in an ocean, like just cruising along in that boat, no stress whatsoever because you've made the proper accommodations to ensure that you're set up for success and you're not being reactive, remaining as proactive as possible.
That's such an important point, because those decisions rarely happen in isolation. I'm sure you could see it on your side too with clients, that usually changing one thing could affect five others. And I think that's why having the right professionals around the table, especially let's say from an estate planning standpoint or healthcare directive, can make such a difference. Kristen, when you look beyond the settlement agreement itself, what do you think a truly successful outcome looks like for families that you work with?
I think that's a great question. I think it's more than one thing. I think emotionally, are they okay? Are they able to move forward? Are they in a better state, less stressed? They see the light at the end of the tunnel. They have gained clarity. They feel empowered. They are able to take on their new norm and know this is what I need to do. These are the next steps I need to take. It looks like having the tools in place to be able to co-parent with that other child, with that other parent, whether it's we are going to be communicating on a Talking Parents app or our Family Wizard or some type of connection, because our communication is not the best, and that's probably for transparency purposes the best way we can communicate at this point. But I think that it goes beyond just legally, right? And this is what the document says, but can it be accomplished? For example, having things in place in that settlement agreement, if there is going to be a refinance, for example, having sought out a certified divorce lending professional to ensure that certain language is included in that settlement agreement so that when they move forward with the refinance, it can actually be done. So simple things like that, but I think the clarity goes beyond just the legal document, and it's financial, it's emotional, it's mental, even spiritual. Sometimes we have different beliefs and parents from different belief systems. How is that going to look in there with one parent versus the other parent? So I think clarity at the end of the day in all aspects is something that is what clients need and what we would offer at the end of the day.
I like what you said about clarity, and I think that's such a refreshing way to define success, and could be as simple as what you said, am I okay? And am I okay has nothing to do with numbers. And I think it's really easy to focus on what happened during the case, but I like what you're phrasing it is that the more meaningful question is, what does life look like afterward? Because what we're focused on is whether someone has regained confidence, whether they feel financially secure, and whether they're able to move forward with clarity. We're very much aligned. And we're also thinking about, are they genuinely excited about what's ahead? Throughout our conversation, Kristen, one theme just keeps coming up. And that's while people can't always control what happens to them, they do have tremendous influence over how they respond to it. And that mindset sits at the heart of everything that we've discussed. So, Kristen, for somebody listening today that may be at the very beginning of this journey and they're feeling overwhelmed, what's the first piece of advice that you would give them?
Take a deep breath. And I love what you said as far as the only person you can control is yourself. And so what are certain things that I'm going to do or not do that would bring me peace of mind? Because at the end of the day, people are looking for peace of mind, that clarity, and being able to get out of a circumstance that is not healthy, that is very stressful. And so I think once you take a step back, take a deep breath, and realize that I can control myself. I don't have control over anyone else, and there's a lot that I can't control. I think that that's the beginning.
Kristen, before we wrap up, I just want to ask you one final question. When someone looks back several years after a divorce or a family transition, what do you hope they remember most about the process?
I would hope that they would remember, I don't recall exactly how I feel or I felt. I felt very stressed. That's all I remember. But I really feel much better. The attorney really not only helped me legally, but was able to help me transition in a way that is positive. And I'm in a better position today than I was before I sought out the attorney.
That's a wonderful perspective and probably the perfect place for us to end today's conversation. So, Kristen, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your experience, your perspective, and your insights with us here today. And one of my biggest takeaways from our conversation is that major life transitions don't have to be approached as battles. With the right mindset, the right guidance, and really the right team around you, they can become opportunities to move forward thoughtfully and intentionally. For the audience, today's discussion highlighted anything. It's that these transitions often involve so much more than legal decisions. They touch every aspect of someone's life, from family and relationships to finances and long-term planning. And that's why we believe the best outcomes happen when you have trusted professionals working together to help families navigate complexity with clarity and confidence. So thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the O'Leary Partners Observations. And if you found today's conversation valuable, please share it with someone who may benefit from it. Until next time, take care and be well.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.
This podcast was edited by Resonate Recordings.